Welcome to the Misophonia Podcast. This is Season 3, Episode 18. My name is Adil Ahmad, and I have Misophonia. Today, I'm really excited to bring you my conversation with Vivian. Some of you may be familiar with Vivian. In 2019, while still in high school, she took it upon herself to produce an excellent documentary about misophonia, featuring interviews with providers of therapy and coping, as well as teenagers who have misophonia, some of whom have been interviewed on this podcast. It's called Breaking the Sound Barrier, and you can find it by searching on YouTube, or there'll be a link here in the show notes. I talked to Vivian about the documentary, obviously, but also her own miso story, what it's like to now enter college during a pandemic and misophonia, plus her hopes for our community. If you want to talk about the documentary, feel free to join the discussion on social media under this episode at Misophonia Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, or Misophonia Show on Twitter. All right, let's just get to my conversation with Vivian. I want to say, Vivian, welcome to the podcast. It's good to finally have you here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Very excited.
Yeah, so we think we bumped into each other, I think, at one of the conventions, and you know, we'll talk about a bunch of stuff there. Do you want to maybe let us know kind of roughly where you're located?
Yeah, so I'm originally from Los Angeles, but I'm currently in Berkeley, California, because I'm a college student, so I'm staying on campus right now.
Cool. Okay, so you're at UC Berkeley. Yes. I'm assuming you're at UC Berkeley.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I want to tell us kind of what you're doing, what you're studying at Berkeley.
So this is my first semester, but I'm planning to study psychology. That's my sort of trajectory as of now.
Yeah. Okay. And so I guess, yeah, maybe we should talk about just a little bit about, it's your first semester there. Were you, and you know, you're obviously on a new campus away from home, away kind of from what's familiar to you. How has that been? And obviously, like, the whole COVID thing's another crazy dimension. How has that transition been for you?
It's been a lot better than I expected. I mean, I was quarantined at home for months, so it was really, really nice to finally get out and kind of experience something new. And the area is, like, obviously not how it usually would be, and neither is the experience, but I'm really having a good time. There's quite a bit to do around here, and I've got to meet a lot of really nice people so far, so I'm having a good time.
So you're actually on campus, like in a dorm?
Yes, I am. We don't have any in-person class.
Got it. So you're on campus, in a dorm, you're obviously socializing. So are there kind of less people around then?
Yeah, for sure. All of the dorms are like singles, so I don't have a roommate or anything, and we have to social distance with everyone, but it's still like we're able to meet people. So
yeah,
it's like definitely not the traditional experience, but it's something. So I'm just grateful for that.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. It could be, you know, for us misos, it's maybe a little bit, in some ways, better because it's all single dorms.
Yeah.
And it's not a huge cacophony, less partying, less just people, yeah, more social distancing, might be kind of a, maybe a blueprint to how misos should kind of transition into college and into other situations going forward.
I've been thinking about that a lot, like, especially with the classes. It's just so nice to have all the other students muted unless they're like talking, but like it's so much less distracting. And honestly, since getting here, my misophonia has been practically non-existent, which is like crazy for me because like obviously I'm not around people as much, but most of my triggers were with family members. So now that I'm not living at home, that's also a big change in a kind of a positive way. So yeah, in that regard, there's like this whole social distancing college thing has worked out quite well.
Yeah, I mean, who would have thought that if you told us at one of those conventions a couple of years ago that you could go to college and there could be nobody around, no classes, but you're still kind of like getting your degree at the end. You're shitting me. But it's kind of interesting. It's kind of a weird. It's like you're wearing a kind of a meso simulation of potential ideal societies. So I guess maybe we'll come back to college in a second, but I'm curious, since you mentioned family life, for a lot of us, family is the kind of the initial triggers. Why don't we go all the way back? When did you first kind of notice this?
My mom always claims that I've had it forever, but I really don't believe her. And I feel like my first memory of it is driving to school with my dad in middle school, so sixth grade. And I was just really irritated by the sound of his breathing, and he would also sniffle a lot. So yeah, that just became a miserable experience every single day. And it then just started kind of getting worse from there, and more things started building up as they do.
Yeah, cars are rough. I've had a conversations with a few people about that, where their initial trigger, well, not, I won't say initial, but some of their earliest memories are friends or family members in a car, and you can't get out. Kind of like you're trapped. It's kind of the worst, one of the worst case scenarios. Yeah, so yeah. I could imagine going to school, maybe these days cars are either, they try to advertise that cars are super quiet, so it's like it's even worse. It's only noticeable.
Yeah. No.
So
quiet cars are the worst.
Yeah, I know. And so why can't we, maybe we should all just get convertibles. That would be great for misos for the convertibles. No, so sure. So at that point, did things then start to proliferate through junior high and into high school at home?
Yeah, I'd say that the worst point was definitely within middle school. Obviously that's a hard time for everyone with all the hormonal changes, and just nobody has a good time in middle school, at least from my experience. Yeah. But for me, misophonia was definitely the biggest challenge. And I think when you're first dealing with it and not knowing what it is, and trying to convey your experience to the people around you, it's really hard for them to understand. And obviously they end up taking things personally when you ask them to stop doing things. And so that caused a lot of distress, I'd say, for a while. But I think over time, into high school, things got a lot better. So, I think that's a common experience, though.
Yeah, so they got a lot better for you at home in high school then? Was it because you were able to articulate it well to your family, or at least start to articulate it better?
Yeah, I'd say a big thing was that I was kind of able to provide evidence that misophonia is real, and I'm not just being an annoying or just making things up, which I think a lot of people have trouble kind of proving to people that, yes, this is actually a disorder. But as I was able to do that, my parents started taking me seriously and being more empathetic. So definitely.
Right. So I forget because I went to high school in the early 90s when there was no awareness at all. But yeah, you're lucky, but it's great to see people like you advocating and looking around and researching and are able to provide evidence to your family members that that this is a real thing. So so that's great that's
I think over the past few years the amount of information out there has just exponentially increased, because I remember being 11 or 12 and looking things up and finding only a few things out there, and they were all well, yes, there's this thing called misophonia, but there's nothing you can do about it, sorry. So
yeah,
honestly, I'm really glad to see the awareness being really especially recently more prominent.
So was were students and friends not kind of major triggers for you? Was it really kind of maybe localized to primarily the home?
I'd say I definitely had more triggers at home, but there were also instances outside for sure, especially at school. But thankfully, it did not get in the way of social interactions very much. I'd say just minor distractions in the classroom and just making like day-to-day situations more uncomfortable, but not unmanageable. So I'd say the largest effect was on my familial relationships.
I guess the one advantage of high school is there's so much going on, so much changing. You're always moving around, whereas in at home, you're like in a room with a bunch of people or in a car, and it's a lot more static. The escape from school is not much of an escape. If you're sometimes it feels like a trap. So, and obviously it didn't start to affect your, I always kind of ask, did it start to affect your grades? But you're sitting here at Berkeley, so obviously you've done quite well for yourself so far. That's great.
Yeah, thankfully it did not affect me in that regard. I think I got lucky.
So did your families try to, I mean, did you go to see any professionals, audiologists, therapists for MISO?
Yeah, I did, you know, like pretty much instantly once my family started noticing that like our relationships were being affected by it, they're like, okay, we need to get some professional help here. And the unfortunate thing was that nobody that I saw knew about misophonia. So it was kind of like working with a blank slate, and they were just kind of trying to figure out some type of way to like make it a little better. But I've never really found anyone who can at least anyone that I've seen professionally who had prior knowledge of the disorder.
Yeah, so when you told them about it, did they at least do their own research, or was it kind of kind of lackadaisical?
You know, I think most of them just went off of my personal experience with it and kind of used their background knowledge of psychology to like make recommendations, I guess. Although I think just in general, talking to someone, even if they can't like make a trigger less make the trigger, the reaction to the trigger less painful, it's still really helpful for like managing other aspects of life. And clearly I'm a fan of the field of psychology since I'm planning to study it, so
yeah, you're going to rock it. Yeah, you're going to revolutionize MISO and psychology. So take it up a few notches. But did you get anything useful? Maybe you or your family members in how you can and how you were able to then deal with it together?
I'd say, in terms of how I expressed my, for instance, asking my mom to stop chewing gum, like instead of being super reactive and angry in my response, like trying to be a little more understanding of like where, how it is for my parents. And I'd say definitely just in general, having someone to talk to about it is, it just makes it like, talking to someone is really just a nice experience, I think.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the great things about the convention. One reason why I do this is to kind of show people that, we're just talking about a one-on-one not just reading a, you know, two-sentence rant on Facebook, which might be helpful for that person. Definitely we encourage that. We encourage any communication, but kind of a deeper, more holistic look at a conversation with somebody is super helpful, I think.
I 100% agree with that.
So maybe let's talk about, let's talk about your choice to choose psychology. I'll go out on a limb and say it was maybe a little bit related to your experience with misophonia. Is that maybe a correct statement?
Yeah, so my experience with misophonia like introduced me to the idea of mental health, and my own struggle with it showed me like how important and big a role it plays in people's lives. And I wanted to be able to make a difference in that area, and I think psychology is kind of a major way of doing that. And I also just really think it's an interesting topic, but that's kind of unrelated.
Yeah, no, it's well, I think it's definitely related. I personally find it interesting. I'd find mental health and helping people interesting in general, but also just the fact that misophonia is, I think, so widespread and undiagnosed and kind of the underdog, and that's always interesting, even from a non-medical perspective. So that's one reason I want to give it a voice. It's just like, this is this is a fact, and I think maybe, you know, maybe at this point, maybe we talk about Breaking the Sound Barrier project that you did. Do you want to maybe touch on that?
Yeah, for sure. So Breaking the Sound Barrier, it's I guess you could say a short documentary film I made last summer, so 2019, about teens with misophonia, specifically like how they cope with it and how it affects them. So I was inspired to make that mainly because I just was really taken aback by the lack of information out there, especially positive information, like that shows, oh, it's possible to live a good, happy life with misophonia. And I also just wanted to share people's voices because I really felt like there was a lack of, community surrounding misophonia. And a lot of us feel really alone. That's kind of one of the hardest parts of this condition, at least.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
we feel alone. We feel like we've bottled something up for so long. We feel it's almost, I don't know, I'm kind of ranting off feelings that I feel and I've heard other people feel.
Yeah.
But it's just exhausting to even think about trying to talk to somebody about it sometimes, because we're so felt like it should be dismissed and minimized, and it's just an annoyance. And, you know, all these things contribute to... Yeah. Just it's taxing on the brain, and I think it's projects like this are great, especially aimed at young people, to kind of let them know that you can move on, and it does get better. You can start to take more control over your environment. So do you want to well obviously we'll have links to it too in the show notes, but and you see your motivation, but maybe talk about maybe some of the the people that kind of maybe were in it or kind of were affected by the project.
Yeah, for sure. So this project was definitely like a journey for me. It took quite a while to get it like started. I reached out to so many different people, like asking for advice on what to do, or because I just wanted to do something to benefit the misophonia community. I wasn't sure what initially.
Did you have a background in filmmaking before, or was it something you're just you just took it upon yourself to do?
Well, my background in filmmaking was very informal. Like when I was little, I used to make movies with my friends, and I always loved it. So I really had a desire to do something related to that. And also just something in me was like, yeah, I really want to make a movie. That would be fun.
Yeah.
So, and also I feel like seeing someone and hearing them, it's just really a different experience than reading what someone's experience is. Like hearing their voice physically, like on this podcast, it really kind of conveys the story in a more heartfelt and human way, I guess.
And humorous sometimes too, which is a great coping mechanism. I like trying to let people be themselves, and we try to laugh as much as possible, and that's just something nice to hear, I think.
Yeah, for sure. So I kind of wanted to make something that I would have like that would have helped me when I was a 12-year-old girl, just like desperate for some type of source of hope for dealing with misophonia, this new thing that I was experiencing, and I felt like nobody understood me. But if I had seen something like Breaking the Sound Barrier, I wouldn't have felt so alone, and I would have felt like, wow, maybe this is something that it's possible to overcome or just to live and be okay with misophonia. So that's kind of the message I wanted to convey. And I decided that interviewing teens would be a really good way to like show how real people have dealt with this condition, and you know, just hearing the voices of other teens for someone who's going through this, is it can be really helpful.
Yeah. And have you and this is, you know, just released last this last summer, have you maybe followed up with anybody who was in it and kind of talked to them about how they're doing?
Yeah, so finding other people with misophonia, especially because I couldn't travel so far to do the interviews, so everyone had to be in California. It took quite a while, and I had to do a bunch of like scavenging online and on like Facebook groups and Instagram pages. And I thought that was a really fun process, getting to like meet other people with misophonia. I had never met anyone else before who had the condition. So meeting such like a wide range of people in terms of age and experience, it was really, really a beautiful experience for me. And multiple people who I interviewed had been doing some kind of advocacy work on their own. Like Natalie, I believe she was on this podcast in her club at UCLA.
Yeah.
So I was also really inspired by what they were doing. And I just think it's really amazing that even though people might not know each other, others with misophonia, a lot of us are just doing some type of work to move the community forward. And I think that's really inspiring.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, these are all inspiring. When I heard about the UCLA group, I was like, you know, just promoting as much as I could on the Instagram. And anytime I talk to somebody who's in college, I'm like, you know, have you heard of that group? I mean, it would be great to have student groups all over the country. Or like little groups at large companies too, you know, just have it progress and just be a natural part of like of life, so everybody can find the group, you know. So like you join a company or you go to school and you're like, okay, first thing we're gonna do is gonna fund the misophonia group, and that should be hopefully one day standard. Have you thought about, I know it's a weird year, but have you thought about doing something like that at Berkeley?
I definitely have. I definitely want to do some type of misophonia advocacy on campus. I think I need to wait a little while in terms of like, I mean, I guess I could start a club now, but it's just kind of odd with the pandemic and everything.
But I think you can get it together, start it online. Obviously everything's starting online these days. Yeah. You'd obviously be the perfect leader or ringleader of the of the group. Because Dr. Johnson mentioned to me that, she's mentioned like a bunch of times that, you know, 30% of her clients with MISO are engineers, and with Berkeley being the big, engineering and computer science school. I would imagine that you have a large pool of misophones to pull from, but hopefully people help.
Yeah. I'm always so interested to realize like how many people are like struggling with this and don't realize it. I mean, I know that the statistics are always varied about like what percentage of the population has misophonia, but it's definitely significant. And I think it's just so crazy that it's taken so long for it to get sort of like any type of awareness in the media and in people's general knowledge.
It's kind of interesting to think about, as an advocacy angle might be like, hey, this could really help not just, you know, students do well in school, but potentially companies that are hiring those students be able to attract better talent and retain better talent.
Kind
of affect the bottom line. So I would think that that might be something that budding psychologists like yourself could think about, maybe own that thought leadership in maybe a profit from it and change the world at the same time.
No, I definitely agree. That's a really good idea. Like, based on the response I got to my film in terms of like comments I received and people who reached out to me, I was just amazed at how big of an impact it can have just to feel like understood and feel like you can relate to someone. So like starting clubs is a perfect way to do that in terms of like meeting other people who are going through similar experiences and being able to talk about it. Just feeling understood in that way is clearly like very, very helpful for people like us.
Yeah. And there's things you can, you know, there's ways you can, there's things you can talk about with people who are actually around you that can help more than just kind of a random person from across the world. Like you can talk about which restaurants are, you know, terrible to go to as a misophone, and you know, these that having that, you know, knowing you can have that or that connection or near you, I think is super, super helpful. And one thing, I guess since you're starting here, so has basically, have you found that like a lot of people's stress is like a large factor, and are you thinking about like how to maybe reduce stress or keep a handle on stress as you're beginning your degree here?
So like, you mean, do I think like how I'm managing stress at college or?
Yeah, because you know, your stress tends to kind of like for a lot of people at least, it kind of exacerbates triggers and
For sure.
And you know, you're starting out, it's like your first semester, you know, I would, you know, hopefully not, but I would think that maybe as things get a little more stressful towards exam times and you know, later on, maybe second, third, fourth year, that it could, you know, you're saying it's obviously you're starting off on a good foot with you know, with, seems weird to say, but you're starting off on a good foot with this pandemic kind of helping your experience, but it could get tougher, especially with stress. I'm wondering if you're you kind of like try to prepare for that, or at least be aware of that and you know, try to get a handle on that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, thankfully the transition to college has not been too hard so far, like especially because of the unusual circumstances and how they somehow are really beneficial to people with misophonia. But yeah, stress is very important to be aware of, and I definitely am always working on my self-care routine. I've been trying to get into meditation. I'm actually taking like a seminar course this semester about meditation and neuroscience, which has been really interesting. So I think that's definitely an effective, like clinically proven effective way to manage stress. And I love going for walks around my semi-empty campus and listening to music. I think alone time, especially for people who have misophonia, is very important. And I love doing that in nature. I think like being with myself in nature is one of my favorite ways of just de-stressing from everything else that's going on. For sure.
Yeah, you're definitely, the campus is beautiful, and
oh my gosh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, the general area, just Northern California at large. You know, when it's not burning down, which is most of the time, it's totally fine.
Oh gosh, we did go through quite a long period of like having to stay indoors because of the snow, the smoke.
Yeah, do you have any other like kind of tools or armor, as I like to call it, that you use to cope generally? Earphones, earplugs, that kind of.
I mean, everyone raves about white noise. I mean, that was just a revelation for me. But other than that, like other than the basics, I'd say one thing that I've really been trying to work on is like self-compassion and being gentle with myself in regard to my misophonia. So like for a long time, I would constantly blame myself and feel like, oh, I should just be able to control this. And I think a lot of that stems from the lack of awareness and lack of understanding about the condition. So a lot of us feel like we're just making it up. But like just reminding myself, like, you know, it's okay you don't have to control this, and you know, like, advocating for your needs is not unreasonable. Like, asking someone to stop making a certain trigger sound or leaving the room or putting in headphones, like, that's okay. Like, I often felt guilty. Like, for instance, if I put in my headphones during a meal, I'd feel like, well, I don't want to do this because it seems kind of rude. But that's a form of self-care, and it's valid. And just catching myself when I'm saying something like, oh, I should be able to ignore this, and just reminding myself that, no, like, this is a valid condition, and it's okay to not be okay in this case.
Yeah, you hit on a number of points that I'll just tell people, just please rewind and listen to that again, because a lot of us walk around with guilt for the same reason. Because we've always, like, as you experienced, have had damaged relationships due to this. And when no one acknowledges that it's a real thing, we end up blaming ourselves.
Yeah.
And it just becomes a taxing thing. And so it's, it's important to kind of listen to each other and realize that, no, this is a real thing. And it's helpful for everybody involved, all parties, to kind of take care of yourself and advocate. Yeah.
You know, like, so, we really don't experience much compassion from the outside world in terms of misophonia. At least that's the general experience that I've heard about. And for that reason, like, it's all the more important to be compassionate to ourselves, like, be the ones we can rely on.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, barring a, you know, an overly negative experience, I think people will hopefully come around and realize that it's for their benefit as well. It just doesn't help anybody to, you know, for us to be triggered and have to react, and then that just kind of good situations,
for sure.
bad situations worse. So
I mean, there are definitely people out there who are very understanding, and a lot of, like, the major advocates for misophonia don't actually have the condition themselves, so I am very I very much admire those people who are empathetic and work to accommodate us. I definitely understand that it isn't easy to live with someone with misophonia, because, like, it's easy to take those kinds of things personally. So I definitely admire people who can be empathetic towards us as well.
Right. So, and so you said that, but yeah, before you started on your project, you didn't know a lot of people who had miso. So I guess so it was last year's convention, the first time you went to a convention?
Yeah, it was.
Okay. Because, so I guess for your project, that was the first time you'd, you said it was the first time you'd kind of talked to anybody that had miso, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Before that, nobody else.
And so are you kind of like, now that your kind of name is out there, are people coming to you for advice and, you know, just somebody to talk to about miso?
Actually, I definitely have had a lot of people reach out to me, and I do want to be able to help more people. I think, I would love to talk to more people about this. I actually haven't talked to so many, but I'm a part of, like, a group chat on Instagram with a bunch of people with misophonia. So it's always nice to check in there and hear about everyone's experiences and rant when necessary. But I do wish I had more people with misophonia to talk to in my life.
Are you seeing any, maybe anything on other platforms? Or is it primarily Instagram that you've been participating with or seeing a trend?
I actually don't. I mean, I use Instagram as my main form of social media, so I'm not completely sure. I'd be interested to see if there's, like, a misophonia community on Twitter, or, like, I don't know what else are the major forms of communication these days. But yeah, I think the more ways possible for people with misophonia to meet each other, the better, honestly. And, like, I think having more group chats like that would be a really good addition to, like, the coping tools us people with misophonia have.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, you got your headphones on, and then you got your phone where you can just kind of reach out for help.
Yeah.
When needed. I mean, 10 years ago, none of this was possible. Very cool. Okay. And so, let's see. Were you part of the convention like a couple weeks ago? Or I think it was like the remote one.
I actually was not, honestly.
You have enough stuff going on, I guess, with school and everything. So.
Yeah, no, my life has been absorbed by academia these days. So yeah. I do want, like, once I start having more time, I really want to get back into the world of misophonia.
Maybe a sequel to Breaking the Sound Barrier?
Yeah, something like that. I do want to get involved more. Like the last year, unfortunately, like right after Breaking the Sound Barrier, I was just swamped with college applications and all of that madness, so I haven't had much time to think about like new projects to work on, but I am definitely wanting to do that. And especially since I'm like studying psychology now, like I'm hoping to involve misophonia some way in that, like especially in terms of if I'm able to get involved in like research as an undergraduate and all of that type of thing, I'd love to do something related to misophonia.
Well, yeah, I mean, it sounds like, and not to add, you know, work on your plate, but we've mentioned just in the last hour a bunch of interesting things that you could do at Berkeley, starting that group.
Yeah.
Maybe you're reaching out to, I mean, that could be a project in itself, just reaching out to the different departments and knowing that so many engineers, that could be a great first kind of group to go after. There's plenty of stuff I think you can do on campus, you know, through academia and, you know, social group forums to kind of spread awareness and, get some ideas flowing on where to take this next.
No,
and
it's
I would
exciting.
Love to
there
kind of...
Somewhere.
You maybe after first year, after you've gone through the ringer in your freshman year, just to kind of maybe catch up later next year and see if you've been able to get back into the MISO community.
Yeah, for sure. No, I really want to do that. I've been like brainstorming for a while, so I'm glad we've discussed some of these ideas, like of how I can continue my involvement going forward.
Well, are there any other things that you may have been that you're thinking about doing? Because maybe people listening can could plant some seeds in their minds too to take their schools. Or...
You know, one of the things actually that I've been thinking about and trying to like get started, but haven't really had much time to get too involved, was like how I mentioned the group chats. I was thinking of like. Maybe somehow finding a way to create more of them on other platforms, because I'm pretty sure like the one I'm in is kind of like for most people it'd be pretty difficult to figure out how to like join, or like you have to know about the specific account and it's kind of like I'd say not super accessible. So I was thinking of trying to expand group chats to like a bunch of different platforms so that like practically anyone who wants to join one can like do so in the way most convenient for them. I'm not really exactly sure like the specific details, but that was just something I thought could be helpful.
Yeah, and maybe that's kind of a directory that if people are taking new members or whatever, can kind of like post a list or something. It's something I might think about to put on our the new Misophonia podcast website. I've been thinking of ways to have kind of resources, and you know, the Misophonia Association has the list of regional Facebook groups and whatnot. But I think it could be interesting to have something like this. I've had a bunch of other ideas, like, you know, having like a Yelp for MISO, like you can leave reviews about you know,
that's really smart,
cafes or libraries on campus to avoid, you know, things like that. So
yeah,
well, I guess we're running I definitely want to do a part two in about whatever, about a year or so. It'd be great, maybe even sooner. But
yeah,
anything else right now that you'd like to kind of tell people or share with people who are listening?
I always just want to remind people that, like, I know there's a lot of, it's really hard to struggle with this condition, and understandably people feel the need to, like, well, okay, let me rephrase that. Like, it's really, really difficult dealing with this condition, and unfortunately that's the reality of the situation, but there's definitely a bright side, and I am, like, for one, grateful for my misophonia, because I don't think I would be where I am today without it. I think ultimately, like, I know I talked about how it like it was hard on my relationship with my family, but I think in retrospect it ended up making it stronger. Like I mentioned, initially my dad was my first trigger, so that was kind of the relationship which the most strain was put upon. But my dad was actually the one who drove me around to film for my documentary. So kind of me in my car with my dad ended up being a really good experience, you know, because I was making a difference. And I think just like with time, with experience, it's possible to turn our experiences with this condition into a really positive thing.
That's a that was just a beautiful story about your the relationship with your dad turning around. I couldn't help thinking, not to put ideas in your head, but that might be a great sequel, is to kind of like turn the camera to you and your family and see how that progression happened. Because I know a lot of, you know, there's a lot of people where that relationship does not improve, and so I think that's a beautiful story to share and to hear.
I guess I focused a lot on what it was like in the beginning, but now I have a really good relationship with my family in terms of my misophonia, and they're super supportive, and obviously there are bumps in the road, but I think they're like, I couldn't ask for more supportive parents.
That's fantastic. Well, let's leave it on that positive note, and just say, Vivian, thanks. Yeah, thanks for coming on. It's good to finally talk to you for this. And
thank you for having me, and thank you for doing this. This is like incredible.
No, this is this is the least I can do. And I think we're both people who are rooting for misophones, and just want to build a community. And I'm super excited to see what you'll end up doing through school and beyond to help all of us out. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks again, Vivian. Hey, if you're enjoying the podcast, please hit the 5 stars and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps more people discover the podcast. Remember, you can drop me a line anytime at hello@misophoniapodcast.com. And we're here on Instagram or Facebook at Misophonia Podcast, or Twitter at Misophonia Show. Music, as always, is by Moby. And until next week, wishing you peace and quiet.